This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 15th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 439. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Ben Achti, Nafila, Parut Och. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, so much trouble in the world, sometimes you need to get away from it all and go to the movies. In time for Oscar weekend, I talk about movies and the business of movies with Ken Charko, the owner of Vancouver's historic Dunbar Theatre.
This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Here we are on the Breaker.News podcast on location on Oscar weekend special edition at the West Side Movie Palace known as the Dunbar Theatre with the proprietor, Ken Charko.
Hi, Bob. Nice. Thank you for coming to the Dunbar Theatre. We have to make sure you exit with some of our world famous best popcorn in the world before you go. Thank you for coming.
Oh, it is. It is the best popcorn in the world. And you can find it right here in Vancouver. There aren't many of these facilities left, a single screen theater. Ken, first of all, tell the story, the history of the Dunbar Theater.
Dunbar Theater's been around since the 30s. It started off as an advanced theater on the west side before Vancouver was Vancouver. It was Point Grey. And it's been around. We are best known for most recently as the only theater in North America that stayed open for the entire COVID pandemic. And we're glad that we did that. We kept our staff employed and really changed our business model to go more towards private rentals, birthday parties, and school events.
Single screen theater in the day and age of the multiplexes that really sprouted up around the 1980s, 1990s, and more recently, home theater, Netflix. How are you able to stay alive in this this atmosphere and this new media environment?
Adapt and take advantage of the shifting marketplace. Right now, Cineplex, which is arguably in Landmark, which are arguably the market leaders within Canada and the market leaders down in the States, are having problems like we are, in the individual ones. But we're able to switch really quickly. If you look within our marketplace, you have some really good smaller niche market players that do not just play films, but they have events. And that's what we do. But having said that, it's still tough. We've not recovered to our pre-pandemic levels at all. If we did, I can't believe how rich I'd be. I didn't know how rich I was back then.
Well, how has the movie-going public's taste changed in films? How else has the movie-going experience changed, and how else has the demand for movies changed?
What happens is things are completely different, and they move really quickly. An example, 3D, you're right, is there, but now we're moving away from 3D. We're actually dropping our 3D component in the next show, movie that we open, Super Mario Brothers, that we're going to have non-3D for matinees. So that's a first for us, where we really like the 3D, but we have a lot of people wanting, so we can adapt quicker and do stuff like that. So that's there. Number two, and this is very important, the quality of the film matters more today than it did pre-pandemic. And what happened is you would get pre-pandemic a film that had terrible reviews, but you would come, the main film would be sold out, so you'd go to the second one, or you'd just go to it because you wanted to see it. That's not the case anymore. If it's not a good film, it drops off exponentially the second weekend, and it gets around on social media. So it's very important that you have good quality films. And when we do really well. Like Hoppers, for example, that's a good quality. It's got its review, I think, of 98 on Rotten Tomatoes and 97, the two different ones. So we'll do really well on the second week of that because it gets out, it's a good film. But having said that, if you get, and I'm using Rotten Tomato not as the benchmark, but just as an example, if you get a Rotten Tomato score of 60%, you're going to have business on Friday and Saturday, then it's going to drop off. So if it's not a good quality show, people aren't going to come and see it.
The business, the economics of keeping a movie theater with a single screen open in this day and age, programming and marketing to the community, but also leaving it open for private events too.
I'm an idiot. There's no way, there's no viable, any other business, a corner store would do better than it is right here. People that have single screen, everyone that you know that owns or runs a single screen, it's because you like the business. You like the community aspect, you like it. We do not do this. If I didn't have my other business, I wouldn't do this. Now, having said that, we do it because we anticipate, because we're entrepreneurs, I'm an entrepreneur. I look at the forward schedule and I go, wow, we have some really good films. This year, I'm gonna make money. But since the pandemic, that simply has not happened. And it's just been a venture of enjoyment for doing it. And that's all. But it will change. Once studios realize that they're the reason it hasn't gone back to pre-pandemic ways, a couple reasons. Number one is quality of film. They don't have the quality of film. If they made at least one Barbie a month, we'd make tons of money. There is quality films like Oppenheimer as an example of recent that did really well. Here, you know, A Marty Supreme, another great film that you made, was great film. So if you make the films, people will come and they won't wait. So you have to make quality films that people don't want to wait for. The key is to have a film that on Monday people can talk about while they're drinking coffee, because then they don't want to miss out on those conversations wherever they are on Monday.
We're seeing theaters also program live events, you know, live viewing parties. Is that on your horizon as well?
It is. We do, like what's really successful for us is we provided free viewing when we had an NHL hockey team. One would argue we don't now, okay? All right. But whenever they get to the playoffs again, we'll do that again. Because that introduces people to the theater that aren't introduced. And then they sit down. These seats are great, aren't they? Mm-hmm. We have great seats here. We have great popcorn. So it introduces, and that's really well. We'll do that again. When that happens, we'll do that. But we do cultural events where, let's take FIFA. We're looking at, we're probably going to show FIFA events for free. So we're going to try to see how we can be able to do that. Again, introduce people to the theater to be able to do it in a family-friendly event way. So we're part of the entertainment industry. Because who can afford the $10,000 for a seat at a FIFA game in Vancouver?
Oh, and also it's happening in June and July. And we've seen some heat waves in June and July in recent years. And nothing better than coming inside an air-conditioned theater to get out of it.
Yeah, but the biggest problem this year is... again, keep in mind, I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm always an optimistic. I'm an optimistic near is what sort of key. I think our movie selection this year is great. Toy Story 5, we're going to have Super Mario Brother. Tickets are on sale. Come and buy those. So we have that. So many great movies that are coming out. I think it's going to be a good movie year as well.
And any thoughts on the crop of nominees for the Oscars?
I do. And I have to say my favorite happens to be my good friend Del Toro, who's the director and pushed out Frankenstein. He was kind enough to come and bring him and 250 other people from his milieu, his people, here to the Dunbar Theater to view that. And that was fantastic. Super nice guy. He happened to say, and it's out there, he said that we serve the best popcorn in the world. And he would know. He's an Oscar winner. So really good guy. Great film. As well, but we've shown most of the films here at the Dunbar Theater. So I have some. There's two ways that I look at it. Is I take a look at the people that commented on the film, and if you take a look at Marty Supreme, people really liked that film, and it was such a it was young, medium age, and old, men and females. It really was a great film. You know, then you had Sinners again, another great film. Hamlet's really good. But my bet goes with my good friend, Del Toro, that was the director of there, and he's a good supporter here at the Dunbar Theater, so we want to support him and Canadian films as well.
What is the secret with the popcorn?
Here it is. I'm going to tell you all on the podcast right now. No, here's the secret. There's about 10 different steps you do in making popcorn, and each one of those steps you can either do a healthy alternative that's just a little off, or you can do the really unhealthy alternative. It's completely unhealthy. Everything that's bad for you, that tastes good. You should eat it only once a week when you come here to Dunbar Theater, or when you're at home and you're having it, because nothing is a home movie like a home movie with Dunbar popcorn. It's great with Krispy Kreme donuts, I like to say. But what I'm saying is every step We do it. Like, if you should put a quarter cup of salt in it, we put a half a cup of salt, as an example. If you should, the type of oil is really expensive oil, we use real butter. Real expensive mm-hmm. butter is what we use, to be fair. And so you get there with the real butter. So every step makes it taste good. And we have a PhD manager in theater operations that knows how to be able to make popcorn. And she does sample tests to make sure it's done. Tia, the manager here, she does everything you can to make sure that popcorn tastes good. We take that serious. We really do.
Yeah, and you will sell popcorn to people who aren't staying for the film.
We will. That's completely, and we do. And that was from the pandemic more than anything else. During the pandemic, it was fantastic. I'm not saying I liked the pandemic, but boy, did we really become the center of the universe for the community as it relates to getting out and doing things with grandma and your family. And we like that, and we've kept that good. We've kept our employees, so that's really good. But this is an industry that still hasn't recovered from 2019. We're still not at that level. Imagine being open for 7 years and not making the same revenue made 7 years ago. But we're getting better at what we do, and we're looking at some really good products. Like, as an example, what we do here, we're going to be having the Greek Film Festival here. Mm. You know, we may also have the Ukrainian Film Festival here. And to get those out, we have to help them to do it. That's what we're doing.
Now, there is on the exterior a development permit sign. Yeah. What is the future of the building? We've seen what's happened in other communities where you take away the movie theater and the community starts to fall apart.
So here, let me just take a step back, because this is business and it's important, is there's a really good place right next to us that was a restaurant, all right? It was a really good place that people used to go. And people say, why did it close down? And the reason it closed down is because of me. And what I say is my revenue dropped, so their revenue dropped. And what happened, they had problems because we were dropping. So we are an incubator for the small businesses around here that people go out and a dinner and a show. So that's one of the things that we have to be. So what does it mean? What does the development sign means? Is that it changes all the time. I'm wanting to be able to, right now, I'm fully intended to have a movie theater there. The footprint is what changes, and I always suggest going to our website. If things happen, we'll be able to go there. Nothing's going to happen for at least 2 years, and it might change between now and then. But the reality is that we have to pay for 40 condos that are magically above us in taxation, and that just puts pressure. So because we don't have those condos doesn't mean we don't pay for those taxes. The city wants it, and that's part of the pressure you get on these type of venues, which I don't think they would, because in any city, this aside from the environmental footprint, we take 80 to 120,000 people that don't go into the downtown core. They don't use cars. Even the buses that they would use or whatever is more of a footprint than the people just walking out to us, which is the best thing for a mental and that. Two, when you come to a local theater or a local restaurant or anything like that, what happens is you meet your neighbors, and that is good community. Could you imagine you live by this person, and it happens all the time, when you live by this person for 10 years and the first time you really say hi is when you see them at a theater.
Tax assessment on property, whether it's residential or business, the key words that are used by the assessors and real estate industry is, you know, highest and best use to try to justify the taxation and the assessments. And I mean, they don't always factor in the best use and highest use in communities can be cultural facilities and the economic burden that's placed on them when other assessments rise and taxes rise and make it difficult for a business that contributes to the community to operate.
So what I would add to those people that do that or whatever is I would add a saying, and this is when I talk to them, is highest and best uses, I understand that. But what they should add is highest and best uses for the community. If they add for the community or whatever, that would allow for carve-outs. And that's important to be able to do carve-outs on that for the community. Because, and this is not, I'm a coffee guy, so I really like coffee. A Starbucks in every corner isn't the best thing for the community, all right? But if you have a restaurant that has a band and they have some art stuff there or a jazz thing, that's good for the community in a whole, not only the theater. So that would encourage that type of development in there to be able to do it if they could save that on the taxes. Now, the other big boys like Bozo and stuff, like, hit them hard with all the taxation. But with the smaller ones, I think that they should do it.
We lost the Ridge, for instance. The Great Ridge Theater in Arbutus was redeveloped. The sign still exists, but not the theater. We've seen other redevelopments which have kept the auditorium and the marquee, like the Hollywood. Have seen also the Rio Theater stay as a theater, also live performance, and more recently the park.
Yeah.
So we have seen some adaptation for use and some retention of the auditoriums and the signage, but in other cases, the Ridge was really a defining moment for Vancouver as the development and real estate rush happened, which placed pressure on other communities, but also gave opportunities for other communities for people to look around and say, hey, the Dunbar still exists.
That's true, and the Varsity, which I, mm-hmm. I also owned, which is a great thing too. You're right on that, but the community has to make a decision on what they're going to, what they value, and that's why I say add that for the community portion of that, and that chapel. Now, that's only part of it. There is no doubt that the city taxpayers should not have to foot the bill for these private companies, and I'm not asking them to. The companies themselves, and this will get me into trouble, is they also have to take some ownership on being able to not only the small independent theaters, but the larger theaters. The rules that they have are onerous, to say the least. Like, they don't want these theaters to make money. It's insane. I'm not going to say anything about the Mouse Company on how their rules really inhibit us in the theater to make money, for sure. How other theaters cannibalize the business of other theaters for no good reason. Other small independent theaters will attack other small independent theaters hundreds of miles away just because it makes them feel good. So our industry itself has to take the lead and not necessarily go to government, because we're not proposing that they do go to government alone, but they need to be able to make the changes and understand we are not 2018, 2019, we're 2026, and we have a lot more pressures to make sure we have a good quality product, good seats, good popcorn, but that we have a proper viewing instructions.
And one of those pressures might be what you got there is a smartphone. The way technology is going on smartphones and projection systems, people can stream a movie from a smartphone or a tablet onto the side of a wall of a building. That's one challenge. People can watch a movie anywhere they want nowadays. They don't necessarily have to go to a theater. The other challenge, though, is also programmatic, is with artificial intelligence. We're seeing, especially on social media, what people can do with this technology and create short cinematic pieces using the likenesses of some of the greatest film stars of today and yesterday.
You're right. Here's what they have to do. Is they have to understand we don't know what we need to do. But if we as a group in any industry at all, be it forestry industry, be it semiconductor industry, if you take that, what do I do to be able to make sure that I survive as a company, then you will fail, because you as an individual can't. But if you take what can we do as a group of companies, as an industry, what can we do, then you'll have greater buy-in and you can be able to do it. Right now with the theater industry, not theater, but the movie industry and all that does, everyone's what can I do? And they're saying, well, if we get big enough, we'll be able to withstand the onslaught. They don't understand that everyone's connected to it. And until the theater, the movie industry understands that, they're gonna lose. And they're not there yet. And sometimes you might have to see some big players vanish before they realize that, hold it, we need everyone to have a viable position in here, not just the big one or two people. And that's with everything. That's with, if you take a look at our CTV and CBC broadcasts or whatever, they're losing out to people like yourself. Why is that? Because it's only about CTV survival. It's not about the industry survival. And then you take a look, and sorry, I can go on forever, but you take a look at what happens here. What's the most popular thing in entertainment today? And I'll have to Google to figure out. It's some under 30 seconds. That's the attention span of the people that go to the movies. So what's the response of the theater, of the movie making industry? It's to make a 3-hour-long Avatar. All right? That's the response. And they knew that under that. So if you make a 3-hour Avatar, a part of the reason what's going to happen is you're going to hurt the theaters because you can't sell more popcorn. But, you know, they're thinking, wow, that's okay because we'll make all the money, but they're missing the picture. Is if that was an hour and a half, you can have 2 Avatars in a year, get 2 ticket prices, sell twice the amount of popcorn, and go from there. We should not be making 3-hour movies. Now, I'm no Einstein, but I'm going to tell you, the shorter the movie is, the greater the attention span, the greater likelihood they'll like the film.
If you had a Ken Turco Film Festival on one day, a triple feature.
I got to do 5.
5? Okay.
I got to do 5. And that's tough as well. Number 1, Star Wars. I'm sitting where I sat to watch Star Wars when it first came out. This is where I sat. All right? Wait, now in this exact seat? No, because we changed them 2 or 3 times. I sat in the front row to Star Wars, and that's because I was in the front of the theater, and this is where I wanted to sit as a 6-year-old kid this year in this theater, Star Wars. And the industry was just stupid, and they were, because they thought it was all special effect. I was a young kid, and I'm telling you, it was because of the story. It was all story. So Star Wars, 1. And I'm not going to go into Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars. The original Star Wars, that was it. That introduced people to there and there. 2, Schindler's List. Schindler's List is a great film or whatever because they didn't have to show much, but a red coat, and that was cinematic genius that they did that to be able to show that. So Schindler's List, because that is the type of picture that I liked. All right? And then you want to be able to Matrix. I seen Matrix when I owned the theater. I remember sitting there with a friend of mine. Matrix was released. I got to watch it 2 months before it was released. I looked over him and said, we're going to make a ton of money. That was it. Pulp Fiction. You have to take a look at Pulp Fiction. That is another great film. And so those, there's one more, but I'll leave it to those ones right now. Those are the great. Oh, sorry. The next one is I have to say is Saving Private Ryan. And the reason Saving Private Ryan for me, keep in mind, not only am I a viewer, but I'm actually a connoisseur. So I remember that one as well. Is they had a 30-second a trailer that was released 2 hours before, and all it was a blank screen with a narrator saying what the movie was about. And we knew as an industry from that 30-second narrative that it was going to be a great story. And you don't have that anymore. You simply don't. You take a look at these big, and they're good, Avatar. What is Avatar about? I still don't know. We're at Avatar 6. And I'm not saying anything, it's not a bad film, but you know, every one of those films, you knew what it was about from 30 seconds. And then you sat there and you wanted to be able to do it. Now I can go down to my 10th, Frankenstein, of course, has got to be in there, it's great. All the great pictures that Del Toro has made, he's a fantastic director, but there's so many good pictures, but rarely are great pictures the sequel. It happens, but rarely are they. You know, but I own a theater. I'm going to tell you a little secret. What I do is I watch at home very little, but every night this week I'm going to be watching something at the theater. And you know, one of the things that I want to watch now, it's interesting, is Rambo. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring Rambo in here and watch it myself. Have a big, huge popcorn, double butter, and then maybe a pizza. And I'm going to watch Rambo because Rambo's coming out with a prequel. You know, and so I want to see how good that is, whatever. So when you have a good picture or whatever, you can go back and watch it 2 to 3 times. The interesting thing about movies that are so communal, which is important, is you can sit down and have that conversation with anyone, and they've got it. And what I find, what's even more interesting, is it's never the films from the last 3 to 5 years. It's always the films that were 10 or 15 years. Now, that might be the way that you remember films, because they're nostalgic or whatever, but did they make films better back then? I think they did. Star Wars is coming out, the new Star Wars is coming out and going to be playing at the Dunbar, I have to say that. Mm. Buy your tickets or whatever. And I'm hoping for great things, but I'm hoping it lives up to the original, not that it overdoes the original. That's not going to happen. So films used to be about losing yourself in what used to be books. you know what I mean, to your imagination and watching the films. It's not anymore. And I hope they get back to that and they make good films. And it's about the experience, you know. Whereas they run into some problems for sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
but there's some good films coming out this year.
Well, thanks again for joining us on the podcast, Oscar Weekend Podcast. Yeah. The Dunbar Theater proprietor, Ken Charco, thanks for your time and telling your story about being in this this very interesting and worthwhile business.
All right, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
InFocusTaiwan.tw. Nearly 60% would resist Chinese invasion without U.S. help, says survey. In the Academica Sinica survey conducted from January 20th to 26th, 1,200 Taiwanese adults answered questions on U.S.-Taiwan-China relations, defense spending and deterrence, the credibility of the U.S. security commitment to Taiwan, and their willingness to fight in a crisis. If the United States were to intervene, 56.5% of respondents said they would resist a Chinese invasion, including more than 34% who said definitely yes, and 22% probably yes. Almost 35% say they would not resist, with more than 21% definitely not, and 13% probably not, while almost 9% declined to answer. Far more Taiwanese respondents see the United States as more trustworthy than China. In ABC News Australia, FIFA, AFC accused of failing their human rights obligations with Iranian women's footballers. Iran brought 26 players to Australia for the Women's Asian Cup, and 5 of them have been granted asylum. Members of the Iranian-Australian community have started a petition to ask FIFA to protect the players who are returning to Iran. The safety of the Iranian women's team became a global talking point after they did not sing the national anthem before their first Asian Cup game against South Korea. In Hong Kong Free Press, China approves ethnic unity law denounced by rights groups. The National People's Congress formalized policies to promote Mandarin as the national common language in education, official business, and public places. The law says its aims are to strengthen cohesion within China, which has 55 ethnic groups. China's government has been accused for decades of pursuing policies to force assimilation across the vast country into the Han majority.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In The Oregonian, new federal data reveals extent of immigration arrests in Oregon and Washington. Arrests during the last 3 months of 2025 were the most since the height of enforcement at the end of the first Obama administration. In Oregon, the data shows 1,655 immigration arrests overall last year, more than the three previous years combined. Almost 1,300 of the arrestees had no pending criminal charges or convictions. In Washington, there were fewer than 100 in January 2025. By December 2025, there were more than 350. In Cascadia Daily News, Billingham men read a book from every country from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. Scott Lambridis, an author himself, finishes 199 book world tour. One book from every country? Only native authors, no tourists. Those were the sole rules when local author Scott Lambridis, 48, began traveling the world via ink and paper in 2018. By 2024, he had visited 199 countries through 199 books, including books from the Cook Islands, Luxembourg, Vatican City, and North Korea. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. NDP amendments to BC's FOI law, an assault on transparency, and Northern BC discrimination complaint partially substantiated, so Human Rights Tribunal orders RCMP to pay compensation. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news or bobmackin.substack.com.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Irish in British Columbia. Did you know that BC's first premier was Irish, John Foster McCreight, a Trinity College Dublin graduate from County Tyrone? March 17th is, of course, St. Patrick's Day, everywhere in the world. Lale Patrig Sunigwich, which is how it's said in Gaelic. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 15th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 15th of March in 1990, Mikhail Gorbachev was elected the first and last president of the Soviet Union? He was best known for openness, democratization, and restructuring. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And bobmackin.substack.com. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com.
Until next week.